Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, May 18, 2017. President Kiir appeals to rebels fighting his government to end the violence and work with him.
At this time, we should focus on building a nation rather than allowing external forces to push us into conflict. As a people, we must reignite the vision that sustained us during the long years of struggle.
And newspaper editors say they are still being censored by security agents.
They deployed their agents at the printing press. So when they saw our main story, the lead story on page one, they just removed it before the printing.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir is appealing once again to armed groups fighting to topple his government to lay down their arms and use peaceful means to address their grievances. Mr. Kiir made the remarks while addressing hundreds of soldiers at the Espele headquarters in Juba during Espele event marking the 34th anniversary of the Sudan People's Liberation Army, which was formed to fight for the country's independence. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
The SPLA military band and a choir perform a liberation song at the SPLA headquarters in Juba's Belfam neighborhood as President Kiir arrives for the 34th SPLA anniversary celebration. Dressed in full military fatigues, President Kiir spent several minutes recalling the rise of the SPLA as a ragtag rebel force determined to conquer discrimination, marginalization, and oppression by successive regimes in Khartoum. Mr. Kiir also used the occasion to call on rebel fighters to lay down their guns and join his administration.
I want to appeal to all our citizens, including those who are in opposition, to embrace nationalism and to be patriotic. We should not allow our own hands to destroy most precious gains which we have made since we took up arms in 1983. At this time, we should focus on building a nation rather than allowing external forces to push us further into conflict. As a people, we must reignite the vision that sustained us during the long years of his struggle.
May 16th is the day John Garang and other South Sudanese rebelled against Khartoum in 1983. A 21-year-long bloody war between Khartoum and the Southern Sudanese rebels ended in 2005 with the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, which subsequently led to South Sudan's independence in 2011. In his half-hour speech, Mr. Kiir stressed the need for unity in the army and unity in the nation.
While we find ourselves at the crossroads, we must press forward and choose the path that leads us back to peace and prosperity. As a government, we remain committed to this principle. Fellow citizens, when our flag was raised, it was raised along with it the hopes and dreams of generations past, present, and the future generations. We must consistently remind ourselves of those hopes and ambitions. But the only way to achieve that potential is if we are united as a people.
But as he called for peace, the president also warned that government forces will continue to fight in self-defense if attacked by the armed opposition.
You cannot declare a ceasefire for yourself. You declare a ceasefire so that two sides respect it all, and that the unilateral ceasefire is not binding on the other side. People must understand this. Law and I'm all to ceasefire, I make sure that I don't violate my own ceasefire. But I have the right to defend myself if I'm attacked by anybody.
speaking at the same event, the SPLA's new military chief, James Ajongo, promised to work with the other army officers to restore peace. And Ajongo says the army will cooperate with the UN-backed Regional Protection Force, or RPF, which is being deployed to South Sudan to restore peace after a wave of new fighting broke out in July.
For us as SPLA, I think, Anina, we made all the arrangements for us to be able to come and operate together with the Regional Protection Force. Because the Regional Protection Force, after all, is coming to complement the security gaps.
Ajongo says despite earlier misunderstandings about the RPF, the Kiir administration and the South Sudan Army fully support the Regional Force, which he says is intended to ensure security for all. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on security matters, residents of Wau Town say the security situation in residential areas of Hai Kamsin, Jezira, Jebel Kheir and Kosti has improved since national security officers were deployed to the area. Last month, state officials asked for national security officers after government forces allegedly attacked and killed dozens of civilians in those areas. The soldiers accused civilians of being rebel supporters. For VOA News, Michael Atit files this report from Juba.
Members of the Kreish community performed a traditional dance at the Jezira playground yesterday as a thank you to State Governor Andrea Mayar Acho to celebrate what Hai Jezira, Hai Khamsin, Jebel Kheir and other local residents say is an improved security situation. Many Wau area residents say they witness men in uniform stealing property, setting fire to homes and raping women. Many are still seeking shelter and protection at the UN and church compounds in Wau. 34-year-old Hai Jezira resident Nejua Fotur says even though she has been living in church compound for months, she is at least able to come to her house and grow vegetables around the compound to supplement the food rations she receives from the aid agencies. Speaking in Arabic, Fotur says security has improved. Fotur says she is really happy to join this celebration today because the governor has really worked hard to improve security in the town. This is what we need and continue with our farming activities, Fatur says. Eyewitnesses say gunmen in military uniform killed dozens of people and wounded others in Wau town. They related stories of how suspected government forces stormed houses, shot and killed people, then looted property in what appeared to be targeted attacks. Within days, the government set National Security Service forces to patrol the area and protect civilians. 30-year-old Zahra Karama, a resident of Wau Hai Jebel Kheir neighborhood, applauds the state government for taking quick action. Speaking in Arabic, Karama says she lives in the UN camp with 3 children but complains she cannot control behavior at the UN camp's environment and wants to return home so her children can go back to school. Karama says she and many other South Sudanese women need to experience some peaceful environment in their own country. We still have children to take care of. We need to go freely to our farms and our children can go to schools, Karama says. 40-year-old Mary Peter, a resident of Hai Salam, wants the warring parties to end violence and work to develop South Sudan. Speaking in Arabic, Peter says she wonders why South Sudanese are killing themselves when they fought so hard to secure their independence. Peter asks, why do you kill your brother? Why do you kill a mad person wailing on the street? This is your mom, your sister, your brother. Karama, Fotur and others in Wau say they are tired of fleeing to the UN or church compound every time violence breaks out and worry about the future of their children. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
The South Sudan Human Rights Observatory Group has released its first report on human rights abuse in South Sudan. The group's co-founder, Remember Miamingi, say they found South Sudan's war is largely predicated on the targeting of civilians. He says allegations of abuse outlined in the report are consistent with other major reports from UN bodies and rights groups. Miamingi tells Ayen Bior he was particularly shocked by the pattern of abuse of women and children by men in uniform.
So we saw that the war is a war against civilians, because even in an area where there was an active combat, people fought, you counted the number of dead civilians, and without a single armed person that was killed in the combat. Secondly, it was a war against women, where you have war taking place, people fought, you probably have at least 10, 20 women that were raped. And thirdly, we saw that it was a war against children. We had high casualty of children that died in the course of the month of April.
Did you notice any patterns while you were investigating and producing for this report?
There is the fact that we are seeing an emerging pattern that you have the armed groups here, the different opposition groups. They basically provoke government militias, and therefore then you see that they retreat out of the villages and allow government militias and forces come and attack, kill, rape, and in the process they attack and then trying to recover or rearm from government sources. So civilians are used basically as the bargaining chips in the fighting that is taking place in South Sudan. So whether at the level of killing, at the strategical planning, at the level of raping, either dealing with the recruitment of children or killing of children or engineering displacement, it is all focused on how to use communities of civilians to intimidate, to humiliate, to punish the other side.
In this last report, which area saw the most fighting or the most killings?
It is Jonglei State, former Upper Nile area. That's where we saw intensity of fighting.
Could you
in Eastern Equatoria, again, we saw high level of fighting and brutality that took place. And then, wow.
Could you be a little bit more specific as far as the towns or the villages?
In terms of the destruction of villages and properties and lives, we saw it happening more intensely, Jonglei and in the Equatorial region. Those were the two areas that we noted significant destruction of civilian lives, civilian properties, source of livelihood, deliberate displacement, engineering, process of moving people away from their communities, adding internal displaced camps or outside the country completely, done by men in uniform.
One of the major criticisms I'm sure you've heard before is that you're in South Africa. Right now you're in Lesotho, so you haven't seen the war with your own eyes. So why should we trust your word?
I see the war that is happening right now in South Sudan and those atrocities through at least 45 volunteers that we have on the ground. I see the war and atrocities happening in South Sudan through the eyes of children who have been raped, through women who have suffered unimaginable violation, through men and boys that have experienced atrocities that they may never recover from it, who speak to us, speak to our volunteer on a day-to-day basis. So, yes, we're outside, but we speak day in, day out to people who are at the center of this atrocity.
That was Remember Miamingi speaking to Ayen Bior from Lesotho earlier today. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. Coming up, we take a look at how newspaper editors are struggling to stay in business in Juba. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What do you like most about your African culture?
First of all, our celebration, it is unique. So the second one, I like the way we look for our clothes. Yeah, the way we live.
The thing I like about African culture is, first of all, the fact that it is unique. You see, African culture is unique. The second thing is that Africans like their culture, which is different from the Western people and so on.
When you see the way African lives, it is more different from the continent. So the way African lives, I like so much. The way they dress too. African, the way dresses is very nice. Have a good look.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. Editors and newspaper publishers in South Sudan say security agencies in Juba censor two newspapers, forcing the Juba Monitor and This Day to run blank space on their front pages of Wednesday's edition. The stories were about President Salva Kiir's restructuring of the South Sudan Army. Juba Monitor's editor-in-chief says the security officers were particularly unhappy about reports that Mr. Kiir changed the name of the National Army to South Sudan Defense Forces. Nabil Biajo has more for VOA from Juba.
Both newspapers say they receive reliable information about the president's decision to change the army's name from the SPLA to South Sudan Defense Forces. They say later, presidential spokesperson Atenwe Kateny contradicted the initial information and insisted the name of the army remained the same. Juba Monitor editor-in-chief Alfred Taban says, for months now, security agents have been monitoring his paper very closely.
We send our newspaper for printing, and there the security, as has been happening in the last few days or few months, they deployed their agents at the printing press. So when they saw our main story, the lead story on page one, they just removed it before the printing.
Taban says he received information about the change of the South Sudan Army's name directly from Ateny and the state-owned television SSBC. Several media houses reported the same news. Taban says Ateny later changed his statement after it was too late to publish in the article.
We left it empty because we wanted the people to know that somebody has been interfering with our work. They already suspect that the security has been often editing or working on our stories in the printing press, but we wanted to make it very clear to our readers that, yes, the security have come and have removed a certain kind of story.
This Day is the other Juba Daily censored yesterday for writing an article on the same topic. Editor-in-chief Victor Keriwani says this kind of behavior is not surprising.
This may be the fifth story has been cut from our newspaper. This was up to 2016. There were some news stories which were cut. They've never told us any single day that we cut away such a story because of this. They don't tell us, but simply they cut it and that is the end of it.
Kwang Pal Chang is the Secretary General at the Association for Media Development in South Sudan. He says he spoke to both editors-in-chief about the sources of their news.
It is unfortunate that Ateny himself is the primary source for this information. And a day later he came and said, he was misquoted. This is not the first time for Ateny to say he was misquoted. Or he did not say it at all.
Chang says even if all media houses were wrong on the army name change, security agents had no right to prevent them from publication.
When you publish stories that later came out to be not accurate, you apologize and you write the same apology on the same front page to show that you are doing a professional work. But with the South Sudan situation, it's like the same way we used to do we used to see security in Sudan, in Khartoum, where security agents walk into printing press and say this story should not go, and then the page go blank.
Chang says Media houses have an obligation to report accurately and responsibly, while security and police forces have an obligation to abide by the law and follow due process. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Police in Uganda have come under fire for allegedly torturing suspects, with both the president and interior minister publicly recognizing the problem this week and calling for it to end. For VOA in Kampala, Halima Athumani reports on the case, bringing this issue to the fore.
On March 17th, Uganda's Assistant Inspector General of Police was gunned down in Kampala. 5 days later, police said they were holding 17 suspects. It would be another month before those individuals appeared in court. Media was blocked from the proceedings, but leaked photos of the inmates showed clear signs of abuse. When they appeared in court for a second time on May 5th, the detainees told the magistrate they were being beaten. They raised their hands several times, showing the magistrate wounds and bruises on their wrists. They said they were being kept handcuffed for long periods of time and were not being fed. The proceedings were broadcast on national television, sparking outrage. Uganda police spokesperson Asan Kasinje says two police officers have been arrested.
The techniques of investigations, torture is not cited anywhere. So if you step out of procedure, definitely we shall question you. Not only why you did it, but you must also tell us who told you to do it if you were under command.
The 17 suspects looked to be in better shape Thursday at their third court appearance. Viewers saw a few of them limping and several of them had what looked to be healing wounds on their arms. Earlier this week, President Yoweri Museveni released a public letter to security chiefs. The president said torture is unnecessary and wrong and does not produce reliable evidence. He said torture is not to be used. The Minister of Interior Affairs then appeared before Parliament and apologized to the country in response to the media reports of police torture. He admitted that laws have been broken and said investigations are ongoing. Uganda Law Society President Francis Gimara says it will take more than words to create lasting change. He says the Law Society is engaging with the Director of Public Prosecution.
We want him to enter into an MOU, we say, for torture cases, give them to us, Uganda Law Society. We will prosecute the commanding officers because we think that they are the ones responsible for these increased acts of torture. And torture is unacceptable because it is degrading, it is traumatizing, and in this time and age, barbaric.
Police spokesperson Kasinje says police are implementing new procedures to document a detainee's condition at the time of arrest.
Before you sign detention order form, ascertain the condition under which that suspect has been brought. And if you are not sure about the medical condition of that suspect, you are not obliged to detain that person. And number two, to make sure that somebody is treated.
The Anti-Torture Act 2012 prohibits intentionally causing pain to anyone to obtain information or a confession. Conviction of violating that law could result in imprisonment for 15 years. Proof of torture can also undermine prosecutions. At least two cases have been dropped in Uganda in recent years after defense lawyers presented evidence that their clients have been tortured while in custody. The 20 suspects detained in connection with the murder of the police commander are expected back in court on June 1st. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Still in Uganda, traders and local community members in Uganda's West Nile region, which hosts thousands of South Sudanese refugees, say the presence of the refugees is a boost to the local economy. Traders say their sales are going up. Some refugees have also established small businesses that employ other refugees as well as local residents. Mungume Davis Rwakarinj visited the area recently and files this report from Kigali, Rwanda.
Music welcomes you as you enter Koboko Town in the Koboko district of northern Uganda. The town, located only 5 kilometers from the South Sudan border, has become vibrant since thousands of South Sudanese refugees sought refuge there after fighting broke out in Yei River State's Yei County last year. New restaurants and shops owned by both Ugandans and South Sudanese have sprung up in the area. Trader Hakim Chaplin runs a shop that sells consumer goods and food. He says business is booming.
My customers normally come here Monday to Monday, buying goods from me here, especially those people from South Sudan who came here as a refugee. They are just here, and most of them, they are in a camp. Others are just within the town.
Another trader, 27-year-old Richard Guma, sells general merchandise near the Rhino Camp refugee settlement in Arua district. Guma says his clients include humanitarian workers and South Sudanese refugees. He says business picked up when the refugees arrived last year.
You see, these days, I'm now at least improving. Since I started, it was actually small. So if you see these days, it is now coming up a bit. Even I'm now feeling now that I'm now even improving because of their coming.
Guma says he now makes a decent profit and can afford to pay school fees for his two children. Stephen Ramadan was a trader in Yei before violence forced him and thousands of other residents to flee to northern Uganda. Ramadan moved his business to Koboko, but says unlike back in Yei, business is slow. For example, Ramadan says he used to import and sell 10 containers of motorcycles and liquor every 3 months. But now he imports only one container a month.
All our customers are all the neighboring countries like Uganda and the Congo. We try to follow them up to Uganda and the Congo, but the problem, the policies of business are different from what we know from our country. So it become very hard for us, especially in the Congo. It's become very hard for us to do it. Also in Uganda, it become very hard for us to do it.
Ramadan has decided to venture into the restaurant business and now employs up to a dozen Ugandans and South Sudanese. Richard Elema is a youth leader in Uriama sub-county in Arua district, which also hosts thousands of South Sudanese refugees. He says since the refugees started coming, the local government opened more schools and feeder roads, making it easier for locals to take their agriculture products to the market.
Where we are, there is a road that runs across here. This has been maintained because of the presence of refugees. We have health facilities that we are benefiting from. Water resorts have come up, being put up courtesy of the presence of refugees.
Besides the new infrastructure, Elema says locals expect aid agencies assisting refugees to employ local youth as a reward to the community for hosting the South Sudanese who are forced to flee their homes. Uganda hosts more than 800,000 South Sudanese refugees. More than 572,000 of them arrived in Uganda in search of a safe place to live after violence erupted in Juba last July. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakalinj in Kigali, Rwanda.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with a traditional Avokaya song from Central Equatorial State. We have been listening to a traditional Avokaya song. I must correct, the Avokaya are found both in former Central Equatorial State and Maridi State. I am John Tanza in Washington. That's it for our show. Thanks for being here. We hope you will join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.